Take your Bibles and turn to Isaiah chapter 47. Isaiah chapter 47. We've been working our way through the book of Isaiah, and here we see God's promise to deal with the nation of Babylon. God keeps His promises, even to the wicked. I don't know if that's a good title. Certainly not one the wicked want. God keeps His promises even to the wicked. But nonetheless, we see this tonight. Now, the nation of Babylon was an incredibly powerful nation. It was, when I say powerful, Isaiah 47, the nation of Babylon would be the equivalent of the U.S. or Russia or China. Extremely powerful, extremely strong. They would have had the best military equipment, the best fortresses of the day. The city of Babylon was probably, even by today's standards, one of the most advanced and one of the most militarized cities on the planet. When I say even by today's standards, the walls were 85 feet high, and 135 feet high and 85 feet across. I mean, they were incredibly large, huge, monstrous walls in a day in which there were no skyscrapers. This wall, they were impenetrable. At the top, they were at least 23 feet across, and at the bottom, they were 85 to 87 feet across. They went down into the ground 20, 30 feet, and they had water that went through the center of the city, so they had plenty of supply. They used to run chariot races on the top of this city. It covered 25 square miles. They could live within the city with a siege against the city, with the fields and crops that they had growing inside the city, along with the hanging gardens that they had, where they had fruit trees and things like that up high in the air, that provided shade and food. They could live for an estimated 25 to 35 years at the population growth with an enemy camping outside without a threat of a problem. This was an impregnable city. This was a city that you could not get through. This was a city that basically, no matter how you tried to attack it, forget it. They had extreme wealth as well. Gold, it was on a major highway. Babylon still is today. It's on a major highway. People, if you want to go north or south through that area, got to go through their territory. And so here this city is. It is powerful. It is strong. And it is proud. Well, what happens here? Let's take a look at verses 1 through 6 of chapter 47. Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground, and there is no throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for thou shalt no more be called tender and delicate. Take the millstone and the grind meal, uncover thy locks, make bare thy legs, uncover thy thighs, pass over the rivers. Thy nakedness shall be uncovered, yea, thy shame shall be seen. I will take vengeance, and I will not meet thee as a man. As for our Redeemer, the Lord of hosts of is his name, the Holy One of Israel. Sit thou silent and get thee into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for thou shalt no more be called the Lady of Kingdoms. I was wroth with my people. I have polluted mine inheritance and given them to thine hand, and thou didst show them no mercy upon the ancient. Hast thou very heavily laid thy yoke? Let me explain this. What we see here is Babylon was extremely proud. Babylon was extremely powerful. Babylon was actually arrogant against God. And God is saying to them, you will fail. Babylon saw itself as a virgin daughter, a young teenage girl that's there in all of her beauty, and it's saying, aha, this represents Babylon. Now, in the book of Revelation, Babylon is represented as a harlot that rides on a beast. And so we see that it's come a long ways. Babylon itself is the source of many pagan religions. Many of the world religions as such, or the false religions, the one world orders started in Babylon. I want you to think about this. The first time man got together and they were going to build a tower unto God, and God was saying, no, I want you to scatter, and they built this tower, and it was almost as if this was, they weren't going to literally make a skyscraper to God, but what they were doing is God said, scatter, and they said, we won't. And as long as they moved out a little bit and could still see that tower in the distance, they knew where the center of the power was. Nimrod, the mighty hunter. Nimrod's name means hunter of men. Nimrod is there. He's enslaving people to build this huge tower where he can control all the people from. This was a one-world religion, a one-world government. Babylon. God came down and scattered their languages. Hence, you have to take language classes in school. He scattered their languages and spread them out. We also see that later on, under Nebuchadnezzar, we have a one-world order being established, a one-world power where all people have to come into the statue and bow down and worship. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they did not bow down and were cast into the fiery furnace. In the future, we see in the book of Revelation, a one world power will again rise and be formed, and the earth will have their central government again there with a one world religion. The great whore of Babylon is mentioned. We see this coming. Now, when 9/11 occurred, students came up to me and said, Mr. Brody, is this the great whore of Babylon that's smoking and all the merchants see it and cry? And I said, no. This may be a metaphor for it. You can see how this could happen, but I believe the Babylon, the literal Babylon, will be rebuilt in the future. If something happens to the United Nations, and a lot of people in the United States don't want the United Nations here. They bring a lot of headaches, and they park anywhere they want. Anyhow, but what happens here is this. I believe the day will come when the United Nations or the one European government is moved actually to the Middle East. Saddam Hussein, that crazy man from Baghdad, that guy actually developed the city of Babylon, had the plans laid out. He spent 7-8 years developing the city. The pipework, the groundwork was laid. The sewage systems were already laid. The water systems were already in place. All they needed to do was to finish the project with the buildings and the electrical work. But the basic underground roads and underground pipelines were already put in place. Do you know the city that he set up was big enough to have an airport landing in there? I would not be surprised if this is not the center of the one world government in the future. And as Europe is becoming more and more Islamic in nature, I would not be surprised if the demand is to move the United Nations, the League of Nations, the world government, which the one world order, one world economy, one world dollar or whatever, euro, whatever they want to call it. I know the euro is in trouble, but that doesn't bother me because it was not big enough. There had to be something else that's coming. I do know that several countries now are no longer using the dollar as the basis of their economy. They're moving to the yen, which I find interesting, the yen or the ruble. So what we see now is they're changing. But I believe there you will see Babylon rise again. Now, the Babylon that Isaiah is talking about is not the future Babylon. I do believe they're in the same place. I do believe this is going to happen again to the future Babylon, where catastrophe is going to strike, and you're going to see that the nations mourn over the loss of their economy. But what we see here is this nation is described as a beautiful young girl. This is their Miss America contest. And they describe themselves as pure, even though they've been evil. They put a good face on things. And God says, you know what? I'm going to cast poverty among you. I'm going to deal with you for your sin and your wickedness. This beautiful young girl that sits proudly on a throne will be made a slave or a servant. She'll be a servant girl. And this is because of the sin of these people. And I, the Redeemer, am saying this, the Holy One of Israel. Israel is the one you've attacked. Israel is the one you've gone against. Now, I want you to look at verse 6 again. Why did God allow Israel to be dealt with? Israel and Judah. Israel was the northern kingdom. Judah was the southern kingdom. He's actually getting to the point. He's speaking very soon. He calls it Jacob, speaking of both north and south when he talks about restoration. But why did God deal so harshly with Israel and Judah? Why did God allow Babylon to win to begin with? I was wroth with my people. I was angry with my own people. Why was God angry with the Israelites? He was angry with them because they polluted the sanctuary. They set up idols in their own temple. They worshipped pagan gods. They put their own children before the fire and offered them as sacrifices on the altar. They did this in order to get the gods, all these pagan demonic deities and gods, they sacrificed these. And unfortunately, in many ways, that's what we do as a nation with abortion. Why are children aborted? For the sake of convenience. I need to make more money. I'm not ready yet. This is a problem. That's a problem. And we sacrifice our children on the altar of prosperity and success. So God became angry with the nation of Judah and the nation of Israel, and he allowed Babylon to come in and take them away. Not just once, but three separate deportments. Three separate deportments. Now, by the way, no matter how you slice it, it's 70 years of captivity. Why 70 years? 70 years of captivity because they refused to obey God and take the 1 year off every 7 years and leave the land fallow. And if you count up all the years they missed, it turns out to be 70 years. So God let the land sit for 70 years. Now there are three deportments. Guess what? There are three returns. Three returns. And each return, if you go by the first one, the first captivity, the first return is exactly 70 years. The second captivity, or the second attack by the Nebuchadnezzar, the second return, 70 years. The third, you know what I'm going to say, the third attack, and then the third return. Guess how far apart they were? 70 years. You would think that somebody even orchestrated this and they knew what they were doing. God was behind the scenes. He promised it would be 70 years, and it was. No matter how you slice it, it comes out the same. So God did this, and he was punishing his people for the rebellion. But when God punishes his people, it is not an eternal punishment. We have two types of divine punishment. One is judicial, which is, we would refer to the great white throne as the judicial judgment where people are cast in the lake of fire. But God also deals with people that are his children in a parental way. Dealing with us as children in a parental way, we don't end up going to the lake of fire. We go through, as we discussed earlier today, the Bema Seat judgment, a reward seat, a reward time. And those that don't do everything they should be just don't get the rewards that they could have. You know, I remember thinking, I was sitting in a school one time, and I was thinking, you know, so-and-so got the award for this. Well, I might have gotten that if I actually tried, if I actually put a little more effort in. And I got thinking, you know, it starts every day. You have to put that effort in. Israel did not, and they failed, and God was wroth with them. Verse 7, and thou said, and this is the arrogance of Babylon, and thou saidst, I shall be a lady forever, so that thou didst not lay these things to thy heart, neither didst remember the latter end of it. Babylonians were saying, We're above reproach. Look at us. Everybody else wants to be us. Nothing bad will ever happen to us because of our sin. We will continue in our sin, and we will continue to get away with it. You know, one thing we can learn from this passage is God may hold back His wrath for a time, for wickedness, but not forever. The wicked will be dealt with. Sometimes, you know, you read the paper and you think, well, why did this person get away with that? Or why, it's unfair that that person over here or this person over there, that things happen the way they did. There's no justice. Yes, there is. With God, He will exact justice. He will exact justice. Verse 8, therefore, hear now this. I think that was the original, hear this, hear this. Hear now this. Thou art given to pleasure. Why is God upset with them? Their whole focus was pleasure. Their whole focus was pleasure to the point that they were crushing other people in other nations. Dwellest carelessly. So second, they were careless with everything. They didn't care. They didn't care how they treated others. They didn't care how they lived in light of the divine. They didn't care that sayest in thine heart, I am and none else besides me. Hey, they even got to the point where they were saying, I am it. This is it. They were being extremely snobby. No one else meets our standard. No one else is good enough. And this is their attitude of arrogance. Verse 8. I shall not sit as a widow. Nothing's going to change. It's going to be like this forever. And next, neither shall I know the loss of children. They were thinking that they would never suffer defeat in battle. They would never suffer defeat in battle. I have to tell you, there are times that we get a little bit this way as a nation. Why? Us lose? How is that possible? Anything ever happened to us in a negative way, we will still be the queen of heaven. We will be whatever. And it's a pretty scary thing to mock God. And yet, there is a war on believers. There is a war on God. But these two things shall come to thee in a moment, in one day. Now, this is prophetic here. Something's going to happen in a moment, in a day. In a day, the loss of children, widowhood, they shall come upon thee in their perfection for the multitude of thy sorceries and for the great abundance of thine enchantments. The day will come when there will be consequences for your actions, O Babylon. The day will come, for thou hast trusted in thy wickedness. Thou hast said, I think this is very important, this next phrase in verse 10. Thou hast said, none seeth me. In other words, I can get away with it. I can get away with it. Thy wisdom and thy knowledge, it hath perverted thee, and thou hast said in thine heart, I am and none else besides me. I have to tell you, the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, were incredibly intelligent people. How intelligent? Not only did they build this monstrosity of a fort for a city, they had indoor plumbing. I have been to homes up in the mountains that still haven't figured it out yet. And they had indoor plumbing. They had an underground sewage system. They had running water that went into the city. You know, I have been in homes where running water was, Pete, go get the water. You know, they had all these things. They had central heat in some of their homes. Abraham was asked to leave Ur of the Chaldees, this area. And yet they had all these things. Not only that, people have said, well, Thomas Edison was the first to come up with a light bulb. Do you know they had light bulbs, the Baghdad battery, at the way back when in Babylon? And they would put off a low level of light with this copper filament, The battery, let me just be very frank, the thing weighed about 50 pounds, and it wasn't like you put it in your back pocket. But it worked. It actually worked. I had a student at school make a copy of it, and we turned the lights out in my room, and there was a little bit of a glow to it. And I thought, wow, it worked. To be honest, you can make a pickle or you can make a clock run. I did it with the kids in youth group. We had a clock run on potatoes. We had potato clock in my room. But anyhow, what we see here is they figured this out. They figured this out. We're talking thousands of years ago. These were not ignorant, we're going to call them cavemen. They weren't ignorant people. They were intelligent. They were smart. They were ahead of the curve. And the other people were living in tents and different wooden cities. They had a stone city with running water and all of these facilities. And they were thinking that would save them. I'm smarter than anybody else. I'm faster than anybody else. Our armies are stronger than anyone else. Therefore shall evil, verse 11, evil come upon thee. Thou shalt not know from whence it riseth, and mischief shall fall upon thee, and thou shalt not be able to put it off, and desolation shall come upon thee suddenly, which thou shalt not know. This is amazing. All of this is going to befall you. So what does he tell him? Stand now with thine enchantments and with thy multitude of thy sorceries, wherein thou hast labored from thy youth. If so be, thou shalt be able to profit. If so be, thou mayest prevail. All right, you believe your sorceries and your witchcraft are going to profit you? Go ahead, let's see what that does in the day. Thou art wearied in multitudes of thy counsels. Let now the astrologers and the stargazers and the monthly prognosticators, if I can get it out. I think they're on TV every day on the news. They run up with a prognosis of what's going to happen, and then when it doesn't happen, they tell you, well, we didn't think it was going to happen. Stand up and save thee from these things. Let your great wise people that tell you all this stuff, let them come forward and give you what is happening. Behold, they shall be as stubble and fire, and shall burn them. They shall not deliver themselves from the power of the flame. There shall not be a coal to warm at, nor fires to sit before it. Thus shall they be unto thee, with whom thou hast labored, even thy merchants from thy youth. They shall wander every one to his quarter, and none shall save thee. This is the prophecy of Daniel concerning Babylon. Go to Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5. Not many years after. Well, we're looking in hindsight back, but for them it was quite a bit ahead. Daniel chapter 5, verse 1. And Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the thousands. Belshazzar was surrounded. Babylon was surrounded by the Persian army. The Medes and the Persians, they were totally surrounded, and they felt confident that no one could attack. Here they are surrounded. A siege is laid at their gate. Armies are all around them. And they had a drinking party. They had a drinking party. Why? Because they knew that no one could get over their wall. No one could shoot or propel rockets over their wall, stones and missiles of the ancient day. It could not happen. No one was able to dig under their wall. They could not do this. And so they felt so confident, they just went in and had a big party. And Belshazzar, whilst he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his priests or princes, his wives and his concubines might drink therein. So now he's intentionally insulting the God of Israel, almost as if he's saying, oh yeah, the last army that stood against us, we're drinking out of their vessels that were used for their God. We're drinking out of the vessels that were reserved for their worship. And we'll do the same with this enemy. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple and out of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem. And the king and his princes and his wives and his concubines drank in them. And they drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver and of brass and of iron and of wood and of stone. In the same hour came forth the fingers of a man's hand and wrote against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. And then the king's countenance was changed and his thoughts troubled him, so that his joints and his knees, or his loins were loosened and his knees smote one against another. Wow. He sobered up fast. Here he is drinking and having a grand time in this huge auditorium, and in the wall starts writing meeny, meeny, tekel, upharsin in a hand. And he instantly sobers up. His knees start to smack one another in fear. And when it says his loins were loosed, I have a feeling that he wet himself. He was so scared. He let it go. And the king cried aloud to bring. And who's he going to bring? Who are you going to call in this situation? God? No. Who are you going to call? You should call God. But the world never does it that way. The first one they call, they read the astrology section. So he calls the astrologers. He then calls the Chaldeans, the wise men, the counselors of war. He calls the soothsayers. And that are going to come and say, oh, it's going to be okay. Some of these guys actually would cut open animals and they'd examine the internal organs of the animals. And if they had the kidney here and a bump there and whatever, it was, oh, it's going to be good. But if it was in a different place, oh, it's going to be bad. Either way, it didn't turn out good for the animal. And so then the king says, you know, if anybody could tell me what this says, what it means, I'll give them a scarlet robe. I'll give them a chain of gold about their neck, and they'll be the third ruler in the kingdom. You see, he shared the ruler with the kingdom with his father. His father was out traveling and going hither and yon with his money. His son Belshazzar ran the place, and he said, "I'll split the kingdom with them. They'll get a third of the kingdom." All of the king's wise men, they came in. None of them could read it. None of them could interpret it. And the king was greatly troubled, verse 9. Now the queen, by reason, and the queen was like the grandmother of this fella. By reason of the words of the king, verse 10, of the lords came into the banquet house, and the queen spoke and said, O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, speaking of his grandfather, there's no Hebrew term for grandfather as that they normally use, so they just say your father. In the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say thy father, made master of the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers. For as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting dreams and showing hard sentences and dissolving doubts were found in the same Daniel. Daniel's name means God is my judge. Literally, the Hebrew word would be judge my God, or God is my judge in our English understanding. Whom the king named Belteshazzar, may Bel protect him. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation. Well, Daniel comes in, and he looks up at the wall, and he said, yeah, I can read it. Meeny, 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 tekel, upharsin. you've been weighed in the balances and you've been found wanting. In other words, buddy, you're coming up short. You're coming up short. The king said, I'm going to give you the scarlet clothing and the chain of gold about thy neck, and I'm going to do all this stuff for you. And I think Daniel was thinking, go ahead and keep it. Because tonight you're going to die. Tonight it's over. The interesting thing about chapter 5 of Daniel is it ends with Belshazzar dying and Darius the Mede took over as king. Darius was the partner of the Persians, and he then took over the kingdom of Babylon. What was the prophecy of Isaiah? What was the prophecy of Isaiah that Isaiah gave? In one night, your kingdom will be overtaken. In one night. What can we learn from this? Well, number one, God hates arrogance. God hates pride and arrogance because proud people, arrogant people don't listen to Him. Second, God uses the wicked to carry out His will. There are times that God lets wickedness have its way in order that He might use it, even though He doesn't let us understand all of it. Third, God keeps His promises. To the righteous, to Israel, I'm going to release you. You're going to go out with singing, chapter 48 of Isaiah. As well as to the wicked. In one night, your kingdom's going to be taken over. That is of great encouragement to me because God promised to never leave us nor forsake us. God promised to be our God. God promised to walk with us through the valley of the shadow of death. Didn't promise we'd never go through the valley of the shadow of death, but that He's there. This is the God that we worship. That He could keep such a detailed promise and cause it to occur. And it also is encouraging me because despite the trials we run into and the tribulations we run into, they don't go unnoticed by God. They don't go unnoticed by God. Daniel, a young man, taken as a slave as a young man, in his mid-teen years. I wouldn't want any lose any of my kids in their 20s, let alone in their teen years. He was taken to a foreign land. His name was changed. He was beaten into submission. Everything about him had to, he lost his family, he lost everything, and here he is. And Daniel purposed in his heart to live for God. God never forgot that. Years later, God is using this one to tell a king, you've been weighed and found wanting. You've come up short. There is a God. Meeni, meeni, tekel, upharsin. There is a God. And this God is keeping track, and you've come short. My friends, this is the God that we worship. There is nothing too difficult for Him. There is nothing beyond His reach. And as long as we keep Him in the center of our life, His blessings are upon us. Maybe, you know, our cars still get rust, and the tires still go soft, and you have to replace them and things. You still have to put gas in the tank. Unless you have an electric car, and then you have to plug it in. But even with these things, God's blessings are upon us, and His goodness is upon us. Submit yourself to Him. Live for Him. And He'll never steer you wrong. And He'll walk with you in those dark days. Our God, we ask that You would direct, and You would guide, and You would encourage. We know our flesh is weak. We know we get weary and well-doing so often. And yet we call upon You to be our strength. We call upon You to be our hope. We call upon You to be our power, our confidence. Those here that may not know You, we pray that they would call upon You as Savior today. And those of us that have grown weary along the way, I pray that you would help us to stand. I pray that you would give us the spring back in our step, that we might rejoice in you. Thank you, God, for your faithfulness and your goodness. Be glorified as we live for you now, in Christ's name.